south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, here's a real ego booster from Francois. From where else? Not France, but Montreal, Canada. He says, "Dear Johnny, I like your show a lot. Not because it's great, but because it sucks a lot less than everyone else's expat show. They're always trying to sell you something, but you don't. In fact, you give away a lot of good free stuff, and I really need to thank you for that. And yes, I have been to Costa Rica, and you're right, it's way too expensive. Okay for a nice holiday, though. You can book a package deal consolidated flight here in Montreal for around $1,000, and it covers the hotel and the flight for an entire week. But don't be fooled into thinking that's all you have to fork out. You better bring along $1,000 or $2,000 if you're going to visit or tour anywhere outside of your hotel, because you'll have to pay for food, taxis, tips, drinks, souvenirs, cover charges, and all that. And I repeat, it's not cheap. So by all means, try to book a deal that's got an all-inclusive hotel package. Then you could subtract $1,000 off what you're going to bring down right off the top. Oh, and I found you're much better off if you're a Canadian, switching to U.S. dollars while you're up in your own town. Because if you do it, once you get down to Costa Rica, they really hammer you on the tipo de cambio, the exchange rate to the local money, colones. Stay safe, Francois from Montreal." Well, thanks for that, Francois, and you gave us some good tips there. And on a personal note, it's good to know that my show sucks less than everyone else's. I must be doing something right, huh? Though I have to say, when I was a kid in my old neighborhood back in Chicago, if a kid showed up whose name was Francois, he'd have definitely got tormented and tortured by the local bullies. Oh, and as far as bullying goes, I believe that's just a normal part of childhood. You need to get bullied a little. It thickens your skin a bit. Not too much, though. In fact, I had an older sister who was bullied mercilessly because she had buck teeth. And then when she was 12 and had everything fixed, she ended up being the high school beauty queen, a 10. And all those old bullies tried to pal up with her. So in a twist of fate, she had the pick of the litter. But still, that extreme early childhood bullying stage did a number on her self-esteem, even to this day. As for me, I got bullied a little bit, but I always somehow was able to pick friends who were a lot tougher than I was. And when they're tougher than you are, they'll stick up for you, and bullies lay off. Now, as far as bullying of kids here in Latin America, they've got it down here, too. I mean, it's a universal human phenomena, right? And once in a while, I'll even see when I'm walking past a local elementary school or even checking out the Latin newspapers, there is some mention of it. In fact, a while back when I was in Peru, an expat gringo friend of mine there who was teaching at a helicopter school, I asked him if there was a bullying problem in the upper-end private schools, and he said there was one particular girl in his class. He was teaching middle school, 11, 12, and 13-year-olds. He said, get this, the prettiest girl in the class was getting bullied all the time. The other kids making nasty cracks and playing tricks on her. And he said, amazingly enough, not because she was the prettiest girl in the class. Sometimes guys picked on pretty girls to get their attention. Kind of a strange phenomenon, but I saw it myself when I was in junior high. Anyway, my gringo teacher friend said they picked on this girl mercilessly, way too much. Even made her cry sometimes. In her case, my friend said it wasn't about being the prettiest, but because she was Venezuelan. Now, you might have been reading about how Venezuelans are just fleeing their country. 5 to 7 million of them so far. And in many countries like Peru, the locals are thinking they've overstayed their welcome. The thing is, if you've ever been to Peru or any of the neighboring countries like Bolivia, the locals have a kind of distinctive look because of the mix of indigenous blood. In South America, the most well-known tribe, the Incas. So the locals can spot someone who's not from the area immediately. So they laid into this little girl because she looked different. She looked Venezuelan. And of course, her different Spanish accent was a giveaway too. Man, I'll tell you, Latinos are fantastic at picking out what other Latin country a person comes from simply by the accent. There's 20 Latin countries and at least 20 accents, many more really. Because, you know, a country like Brazil or Mexico, they're so large and so spread out like the States is. There are a lot of regional accents too. And as for me, even though I've been down here 30 years, I can pick out maybe a half a dozen Latino accents, but nowhere near the full spectrum. For example, by speech alone, I can't tell the difference between a Colombian or a Venezuelan, or even a Nicaraguan from a Costa Rican. It's difficult when the countries are right next to each other. You know, when countries share a border, because there's a lot of bleed through and overlap. But I can sure spot a Chilean, Guatemalan, Argentine, Puerto Rican, or someone from the Dominican Republic. Come to think of it, I have a hard time picking out a Honduran from a Guatemalan, too, because they have a common border. But they can certainly pick each other out by their own accents, though. I'm just not that good at it, and I suspect most gringos and expats, no matter how long they've lived in Latin America, are in the same boat. All right, speaking of giveaways and free stuff, I've been getting a lot of requests lately for the information on how to get ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. I have a hard time pronouncing that. I'll take another stab at it. Hydroxychloroquine. How's that? Any better? Anyway, it's difficult to get in the States and Canada. Doctors won't write prescriptions and pharmacies aren't carrying the stuff. Besides, as you know, though it's a little different now, if doctors and medical professionals talked about it, they actually put their jobs at risk. However, little by little, the truth is getting out. Before, if you'd even mention it online, they'd say it was false science. They'd call you a conspiracy theorist and cancel you. Anyway, there's a large group of doctors that are offering to write prescriptions for you online. Once you email them, they'll call you direct by phone, do a patient history on you so it's all legal and above board. Then they'll write and fill a prescription for you, and it'll arrive by U.S. mail. Now, admittedly, it ain't cheap, not like here in Latin America. It's going to cost you probably around $150 to get a full ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine treatment protocol. But hey, that's better than a trip to the emergency room and getting fitted for a ventilator, and you know how that usually ends. And I think, but I'm not sure, that $90 of that $150 goes for the doctor's phone call to you. You know, it's kind of like a virtual office visit. So anyway, if you want to get this info, it's called the America's Frontline Doctors website. Oh, and when you first pull up the website, this question is asked. How do I get COVID-19 medication? That says it all. You just follow the instructions, click on the right boxes, and the doctor will, or so they say, call you within 2 to 7 days to get the ball rolling. Which means, of course, you shouldn't wait till you have symptoms. You get this stuff before you have any symptoms. So you have it on hand sitting in your medicine cabinet. It's an insurance policy. Because, you know, according to the ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine protocols, you're supposed to start taking it as soon as you feel some of the symptoms coming on. That means you'll have to have it on hand. So getting a hold of these doctors right now is kind of an insurance policy. You might never have to use this stuff, but you'll have it on hand. And you'll have it on hand for your friends and loved ones if it hits them. Oh, and of course, you know, gringos and expats are coming down to Latin America all the time, even in the midst of this COVIDiot thing. They're coming down to do the usual things for vacation, for residency, to open bank accounts, rent and buy apartments, etc. And the smart, astute ones, what they're doing is stocking up on ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine because they can go right into the drugstore and buy the stuff. No prescription required. In fact, just yesterday, I accompanied a 60-something gringa lady who was down for a visit to a local drugstore. She speaks no Spanish, so I was giving her a hand. And she bought 5 complete treatment doses of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And it worked out like this. She paid a total of $8 for the normal 5-day ivermectin protocol for an adult, which is 3 6-milligram pills a day for 5 days. That's 18 milligrams a day. For 5 days. That's it. Now, they don't come in 18-milligram pills. They come in 6-milligram pills, so you take 3 of them. And as for the hydroxyquinolone, still can't pronounce that, right? She bought a 5-treatment supply of that stuff, too. That ended up running her around $10 for a full-course treatment. That's 200 milligrams a day for 5 days also. And it comes in 200-milligram doses. Dead simple. Now, of course, you should be taking other supplements like vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, selenium, and quercetin. But the real magic bullet is ivermectin, with hydroxychloroquine running a close second. But using both at the same time for 5 days is a killer combination. Now, you can look this up in a lot of different places. Of course, the lamestream media doesn't want you to know that because there's no money to be made by Big Pharma. But you knew that already, right? But at least the proper scientific studies are leaking out, and they can't suppress the information any longer. Too much of it's been coming out. Oh, and yes, it works on the so-called variants, too. Yeah, the variants. Come on. That's just another planned Big Pharma, Dr. Fauci media blitz tactic to scare everyone into taking a third jab, then a fourth, then a fifth. It'll never end, which only really puts countless more billions of dollars into the pockets of Big Pharma. Just follow the money. It's as simple as that. So anyway, if you want the best insurance policy we have so far, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link to this 200-plus group of doctors called America's Frontline Doctors, who've set up this website for people who just can't get the COVID-19 medication, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. By the way, that gringo lady I took to the pharmacy, she asked me a very interesting question. She says, what happens when I'm flying back home and Homeland Security or TSA asked me why I have these boxes of pills? I said, I don't know. That's on you. But the worst that could happen is they'll just take them from you. Because as you know, TSA can't confiscate any scheduled medicine if you don't have a prescription for them. You know, in the States, there are three schedules, 1, 2, and 3. And you can only get that stuff at a pharmacy with a doctor's prescription. And hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin are in the States, Canada, and Europe, scheduled drugs by prescription only. So then what did I tell that gringo lady with her box of 75 6-milligram ivermectin tablets? Hey, at least they're small. They're very small, about the size of a ladybug. And the other box of 25 200-milligram hydroxychloroquine pills? Well, I just told her what others who've done the same thing have said to me. They separate them and mix them in with their vitamin bottles. Again, I'm not advising you to do anything illegal. I'm just here to report what other gringos and expats who are bringing that stuff home have explained to me how they've been doing it. Because, you know, these days almost everyone carries vitamins and supplements with them when they're traveling. That means you've got some pill bottles you're taking back and forth, and I guess, according to them, it's good camouflage. Maybe you've got a better way, you decide. But so far, I haven't heard of anyone who's had them snatched by Homeland Security or TSA. And I know gringos and expats have been hauling them back for months now, but who knows? In fact, in April, my brother came down from Chicago, and he took back 5 full treatment doses of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and made it back to Chicago fine. And he didn't mix them with any of his vitamins or pills. He just took them in their original little boxes with no problem. But just think of it. For $150, you can get a treatment dose up in the States. Whereas here in Latin America, you could get 5 complete treatment protocols for $100. That's just $20 for a full treatment, doubling up with both medications, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Again, if you're not aware of how you take this stuff, as soon as you start getting some symptoms within a day or two, fever, chills, dry cough, you take a 5-day regimen. That's it. Some people claim 3 days is enough, but the protocol says 5 days. And as the statistics are bearing out, if you follow that treatment course, you'll get sick because you got symptoms coming, right? But there's almost no chance you'll end up in the hospital. You'll recover nicely within a couple of days at home. Hey, there's just hundreds of new scientific papers coming out that say exactly that. That's why when I hear stories of people who tell me their aunt, uncle, grandpa, whatever, died of COVID or ended up in the hospital and had those secondary COVID effects, what they call long COVID, I'm sure you're hearing about that now. I always say, I'll bet you $100. I used to say, I'll bet you Bitcoin, but Bitcoin's too expensive now. I'll bet you $100. They never took hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. And you know what? Every single time, I was right. That was the case. All right, moving on. You know, in the last couple of months, I've been getting absolutely deluged with emails from people saying, Johnny, I've had it. They name this or that or some other thing that's pissing them off that has become the last straw. And suddenly, they just have to get the hell out of Dodge. Took a while, but finally, people are falling or jumping off the fence like flies. Like, for example, this typical email from Mr. Ari says, Hi, Johnny. Please don't use my real name if you happen to read this in your podcast. I'm a longtime listener here. I was just listening to your podcast this morning about the VAERS report. That would be the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. Coincidentally, the day after you spoke about this, the governor of my state, notice I didn't say my governor, proclaimed that all state employees and all healthcare providers, both public and private, must be vaccinated. Johnny, this is the final straw, and we will be leaving as soon as my business is sold. My rant now being over, Johnny, I was wondering if I could get a copy of that Harvard report you were talking about. Thanks, Mr. R. You know, Mr. R, I've got a big virtual stack of emails from people who feel the exact same way as you do. Most of them, like you, getting their ducks in order, selling their houses and their businesses, or at least trying to sell them. Now, while the housing market is still hot. In fact, it's red hot, but it won't be forever. Though, depending what business you're in, the COVID-iot lockdown crisis has really laid waste to whole business sectors, as you well know. So I do hope, Mr. R, that your business survived well enough and you are able to sell it. Though I have to say, most Americans are just going to go down with the ship. They don't even know there's an option to get the hell out of Dodge. How would they if they only listened to lamestream media and our CNN addicts? But in a twisted way, it's a very good thing for those of us already living down here in Latin America, because who wants hordes of gringos and expats stampeding down, bringing their bad woke habits with them and jacking up the prices for those of us who saw the light, took the chance, and came down early? Though even if that were to happen, the good news for us long-term gringos and expats is that most of the stampeding herd will end up in Costa Rica and Mexico, because they don't know any better. But still, even if they end up there, they've placed themselves out of reach of the long arm of Big Brother and the lunatic politicians in charge. Problem is, a huge percentage of them will be retired teachers and government workers, so they'll try to turn whatever Latin country they landed in into another California. Yep, that's right. If you live or hang around the gringo tourist trail, you'll run into lots and lots of woke gringos and expats. Speaking of Mexico, here's what people don't know, and gringos and expats living in Mexico don't like to talk about. They've got the blinders on. Reading from this article that came out just last Wednesday from Associated Press, AP, Mexico Bureau. It says, faced with increasing theft of gasoline and diesel by criminal gangs that drill illegal taps into government pipelines, the president of Mexico, Obrador Lopez, shut down many pipelines. So fuel is now moved by tanker trucks instead of pipelines, and fuel trucks are now being targeted by hijackers, causing gas shortages and long lines at gas stations. LP Gas, known as Gas Propano here in Latin America, is also hauled exclusively by truck, and they're being hijacked in numbers never seen before, too. And the Mexican government, under pressure to do something about it, compounded the problem by announcing last Sunday there'll be price controls placed on LP Gas, which 70% of Mexican households use to cook their food. And already, within a week's time, has led to gas shortages because the largely private gas distributors refuse to operate under government-imposed profit margins. Worse yet, the article says, distributors often shortchange customers on the amount of gas they deliver. And some, in the rural areas, charge as much as 50% more than the weight they've delivered, thus contributing to overall gas price increases in Mexico of 50% in just the last year. All right, me, John here. Now, of course, that has really no bearing on gringos and expats living in Mexico. Most likely, you'll be using LP gas for cooking, too. I do. Now, of course, you longtime listeners have heard me say before that I had two 100-pound LP gas tanks in a shed in my garage that could easily last me a whole year. And I use LP gas, like so many gringos do, for the stove, gas dryer, and hot water heater. Though lately I've switched to solar hot water heating, but for years and years I did it with gas. Now, breaking it down, I pay for my LP gas around $7 or $8 a month. And if that goes up 50, even 100%, it's an annoyance, but us gringos and expats can easily deal with that kind of increase. Whereas 70 or 80% of Latin Americans only make $300 a month or so. So they're just getting by. And a 50% rise in gas prices will send a lot of them to the street doing huelgas. A huelga is a strike or street protest, which is exactly what happened this week in Mexico. But it was the actual truck drivers, the LP gas distributors, that went on strike Tuesday after the government imposed price controls. Though I have to admit, me Johnny here, that most of those distributors are corrupt. But creating a state-owned gas distribution company to compete, that's what the president of Mexico wants to do, is really stupid. Because no matter how corrupt private distributors are, government corruption will always trump that. Like I said, LP gas distributors are very corrupt. You longtime listeners heard me tell the story of how one gas distributor kept ripping me off time after time. Instead of getting 100 pounds, I'd get something like 90, 92, or 93 pounds in my 100-pound tank. How'd they know that? I had a regular old bathroom scale in the room I keep my gas tanks in, and when they deliver a tank, I'd have them put it on the scale. Now, of course, the tank has its own weight, anywhere from 20 to 25 pounds, but it's stamped right on the tank. So you just weigh it on the bathroom scale and subtract that, and you get the actual weight of the gas. It's supposed to be 100 pounds in a 100-pound tank. It was always close to 90, but they'd charge me for 100, and it didn't matter how many times I'd phone up the distribution office. They wouldn't do anything about it. So I switched distributors. You know, every Latin American country has three or four different gas distributors, sometimes more than that. So there is some competition, but I believe they're all price fixing and screwing everyone out of the actual weight. So I switched distributors twice. Same results, always close to 90 pounds, which means they're stealing 10% every time. And when I'd confront a driver and his drop-off man, they were wide-eyed and clueless. For one thing, they'd never seen anyone weigh a tank before. I was the first one, you know. Leave it to the gringo to try to check the exact weight. Well, of course, the driver and his helper weren't responsible for the underweight problem. It was at the main filling plant. But obviously, the sweaty masses in the general public had no idea they were getting ripped off constantly either, because they never weighed their tanks. And you know, at the time when I was all pissed off about it, I thought about writing an article in the local papers. My Spanish wasn't good enough, but I could have had someone help me. Then I thought, what's the use? They're all doing it. And then, surprise, surprise, about 2 or 3 years later, there actually was an expose in the Guatemalan newspapers. And within 2 weeks, all the big LP gas dealers put out full-page ads in the press, guaranteeing that their weight would be spot on, pledging their total honesty. Well, wouldn't you know it, that lasted about 6 months. Though the next time I weighed a tank, it was closer to 97 pounds instead of 100. Much better than 90 or 92. But, you know, they could call it plus or minus 3% in some people's minds, a reasonable margin for error, but to me, just a more subtle way to gouge you. After that expose, because as I continued to weigh those things over the years, they are always about 3% underweight, never overweight, which should have been the case 50% of the time, you know, plus or minus 3% means half the time it'll be slightly underweight, half the time it'll be slightly overweight. That never happened. Anyway, in Mexico right now, there's a war with LP gas distributors who will, according to this article anyway, and people I know, will almost always shortchange their customers, sometimes as much as 50%. Man, they can get away with it too, especially out in the boonies, because almost no one bothers to weigh them. And you know, you can get a bathroom scale at a hardware store for 10 or 20 bucks. Why not? Though I guess that's a gringo thing. All right, one more thing about Mexico that gringos and expats just don't seem to want to talk about or face. That is, regarding gringos and expats who live in Mexico or are thinking about it as their plan B destination. As unwoke people in the States get more and more wise to the idea that getting out of the country is the way to go, they're often thinking, of course, of Mexico. Why not? It's an easy hop over the border, much cheaper than the States and totally gringo-friendly, you know the drill. But did you know the Mexican government just keeps on finding hundreds and hundreds of clandestine grave sites? The most recent one just 8 miles across the border from Brownsville, Texas, USA, in an area known as La Bartolona. In fact, in the area of called Tamaulipas alone, 57 clandestine mass extermination grave sites have been found since 2012. I know, so what, you might say. That's got nothing to do with expats and gringos, right? Well, here's what you didn't know and what people don't like to talk about. That in just 5 such clandestine grave sites, they've found 600,000 skeletal remains since 2010. 600,000 people buried in just 5 such sites in just 1 district in Mexico. And we're not just talking about burying bodies the normal way. They're finding bodies in fire pits and containers used to incinerate large numbers of people at once. It's like a modern mini Holocaust, just 8 miles south of the U.S. border. So are you getting this? They're continually finding crematoriums where they've disappeared or pulverized hundreds, even thousands of people at a crack. On top of that, they're discovering that certain prisons, like, for example, Piedras Negras, in the department of Coahuila, was used as a clandestine crematorium extermination center, where hundreds of gang members, prisoners, and civilians were found burned in diesel fuel barrels. And then, for example, as recently as June, 2 months ago, there was a shootout in Reynosa that left 19 people dead, most of them civilian, innocent bystanders. And in the process, the gangs kidnapped 119 people. And you know, people always say to me, Johnny, why live in Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Panama, Colombia, Bolivia? Those places are so far south. Why not Mexico? It's right across the border. Those Latin American countries, they're pretty much the same, right? Well, I'll tell you, I've lived the last 30 years south of the border, south of Mexico, where once in a while you read about a kidnapping or two, or a shootout where 2 or 3 people get tagged, always drug-related, or some jealous Latino crime of passion. But you never, except in a country that's having a civil war, hear about cremation and extermination sites consisting of hundreds of people, or even dozens of people, or even 5 people. The brutal scale that the bad guys in Mexico operate at is at a whole other level compared to any other country in Latin America, except perhaps Colombia, where the FARC, you know, the guerrillas and the boonies, are still fighting over control of the poppy and the coca fields. But even so, civilians are rarely involved, and gringos almost never. I'm telling you, Mexico is a corrupt failed state on the level that no other Latin American country even approaches. Of course, we have to mention Venezuela here too, where 5 to 7 million have already escaped the mess there. So then you might ask, why aren't millions escaping Mexico? Well, they are. Millions slip into the states every year as illegals. And the numbers have more than doubled since Biden got in office, because you will find out if you get boots on the ground down here in Latin America and learn a little Spanish, whether it's true or not, everybody believes Biden has reversed all of Trump's immigration policies and has thrown open the borders. And in many ways, he has. Hey, you know the old saying, you get the politicians and the government you deserve. After all, you voted for them. By the way, I'd just like to mention again that next week, I'll be deep in the Latin jungle and incommunicado. So if you choose to tune in, the shows you will hear will be repeats of either the worst or the best of the Expat Files, depending on your perspective. All right, now the sad news from Mike, sometimes known as Dave, from up in the States. Man, there are just so many Daves out there. Who'd have thunk, huh? Anyway, he says, Johnny, I hope you're doing well. As someone who's listened to every one of your shows, more than 1,000 episodes, I know that several times in the past you've discussed the lamentable state of education in Latin American countries, especially in their pathetic government public schools. As you know, the poor quality of teaching in the U.S. public schools has been deteriorating for decades, and given this latest news I will share, may eventually catch up with that of Latin American pathetic public schools soon. Perhaps this is what the liberals mean by achieving equality. So I have for you a recent news item, and the headline says it all. Here's the headline. New Oregon law allows students to graduate without proving they can read, write, or do math. All right, me, Johnny here. Sad but predictable. In fact, way back when I was in high school in Chicagoland, they would flunk a few people, hold them back. But eventually, if they kept coming back over and over, they'd let them pass. But the teachers back then at least gave it a hell of a try. After school and weekend tutoring and all that. But reading the highlights of this article is really depressing. It's from a report from a site called Oregon Live. It says, for the next 5 years, an Oregon high school diploma will be no guarantee that students who earned it can read, write, or do math. On July 14th, the governor signed Senate Bill 744 into law, suspending the state's reading, writing, and math proficiency requirements while the state develops new graduation standards that will benefit Oregon's Black, Latino, Latina, Latinx, Indigenous, Asian, and Pacific Islander, tribal, and other students of color. It says the requirement that students demonstrate levels in reading, writing, and particularly math have led many high schools to create workshop-style courses to help students strengthen their skills and create evidence of mastery. However, now most of these courses have been discontinued since skill and requirement levels were paused well before the news that lawmakers had killed it entirely. And here's the real kicker. It says Oregon's graduation rates currently rank near last in the country. Man, am I glad I'm living here in Latin America. Let's see now. Illiterate is just another word for unemployable, right? But then again, you know Oregon, they always need lumberjacks. Just pull the cord on that chainsaw and you're good to go. Remember that song, I'm a Lumberjack and I'm Okay? I drink all night and I work all day? Monty Python. Who else? Of course, no disrespect intended for my vast contingent of lumberjack listeners out there. I wonder how much it'd hurt my ratings if I got canceled by the lumberjack crowd. I guess we'll see. South
of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.